Our good buddy from the 21st Century Media Alliance is in studio here, FDH golf analyst Tom Denk, who is spinning off onto his own alliance platform here over the course of the next several months here at Mr. Flatstick. Happy to have him as part of the golf roundtable here tonight. And we have a gentleman on the phone lines as well joining us here. We've had on folks before in the past from this outlet, a really, really excellent wire service. It's been around an awful long time, and it can now be found at sportsnetwork.com. They furnish wire copy to so many different outlets out there. This gentleman happens to cover golf for them. He is Kevin Curry from Sports Network, and we're very happy to have him on the FDH Lounge. Kevin, it's good to have you on tonight. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and we've got our own guy in studio here, and we're going to have a fun time breaking down everything that's going on. And I know that Tom, you had mentioned to me about Whistling Straits and wanting to get something out there about that. I will just say personally, again, this is out of the ones in the PGA and the U.S. Open rotation, this is my favorite course. I mean, going back to 04, I just fell in love with it when it was there. I love it. I love links stuff in the first place, but again, you know, being there, nestled right off of Lake Michigan on the coast of Wisconsin, a reclaimed brownfield, as I understand it. So, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of imagination that it took to even put that there. But, Tom, what are your thoughts on Whistling Straits?
And by the way, welcome, Kevin. I was reading your site today. Some good stuff on there.
Thank you.
Rick, I think on Thursday we were texting back and forth, and mm-hmm. I was saying, you know, I liked the course. I liked the last tournament there. But as the week went on, I've gotten more and more away from Whistling Straits, and my idea of this is it's kind of the Heidi Montag of pro golf sites.
Okay,
it's just it was this brown field, and you give it 15 plastic surgeries, and the next thing you know, you're texting and driving off a Malibu cliff by tweeting about your dog. It's just going to end in disaster, which is exactly what we saw with the week. I just don't get how someone like Herb Kohler, they put that much money into the course, and people are, you can't remember to leave spectator places for them to walk around. I just don't get how you could give that much foresight into a course, specifically build it for major championships, and then forget, you know, where you're going to put the patrons. I mean, Augusta National thought of mounding like in the 40s. It's not a hard idea. I mean, half the course is, you know, set up on like little inlets, so like half the holes play on the lake. But it just seemed to me a gross oversight that they've had it there twice and, you know, kind of ended up with the 18th hole debacle. So I think it has its merits. The players never really, they're usually pretty vocal if they don't like the course. It seems they do like it. But, you know, like I said, they got Heidi Montagged in the end. That's just, Kevin?
Yeah, what do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I do like the course. I think Pete Dye went a little overboard with the bunkers, obviously. What they were saying was some of the bunkers were the size of a trash can, mm-hmm. And you don't know that it's a bunker. And, just the crowd can walk anywhere. They showed, I think it was Saturday afternoon, a little girl playing in a bunker that was obviously outside the ropes. So, you have things like that going on. Brings up a lot of questions when it hits into the bunkers, and there's so many different areas you could go with this conversation. And I know one of a lot of the guys who were there, Jim Breiters, who you guys have had on in the past, covered it for us, and I helped him out. And we're watching it. Guys who were there tweeting saying the marshals just did an awful job the entire week, mm-hmm. and that leads into the last situation with Dustin Johnson. If he's given more than, roughly 5x5 circle, maybe he can tell he's in a bunker.
Hey, Kevin, did you see what John Feinstein put up today?
I have not seen John today, no.
I really like John as a writer, and he's pretty connected in the golf. But he went to a number of PGA rules officials, and they all said that it's completely normal in an event like that in the 18th hole of a last hole of a championship, any shot into a crowd during those last cumulative holes, the rules official should be explaining when they're in a crowd like that, what dangers oppose a player? Like, so
absolutely,
not like
absolutely.
It wouldn't be invalid to say, hey, Dustin, be careful. There are some traps here, and this course is crazy. And
yeah.
Feinstein really crushed the PGA marshalling for that. And I tweeted this right at the end of the tournament was the caddy, Bobby Brown.
Bobby Brown, yeah.
I mean, the caddies want it both ways. They want to make all the money they do. Bobby Brown's made $244,000 this year, okay? That's six times the national gross average of income. He's making, you know, the guy's going to make $300,000 by the end of the year, most likely. But they don't want the blame. He tossed the bag down and then basically started walking off distance. I mean, who cares if you get put on the clock during the last hole of a major championship? And you know what? A lot of people said, how could he realize that in the trap? If you go back and look at, you know, the definitive, you know, photos, that ball was like a foot and a half back. It wasn't like it was, you know, 4 inches off an undefined lip. You know, that was about 18 inches to 2 feet back into the trap. I think, you know, I hate to say it, but he should fire that guy. I mean, he didn't calm him down on the 70-set, you know, during the last round at Pebble. You know, Dustin Johnson on 7 at Pebble Beach when he was melting down, he took that shot left-handed, then he immediately ran up and then ran the next one over the green. I mean, he needs to – I mean, that's why Tiger, you know, hired Fluff back in the day. You know,
yeah,
there is something
and I'll be honest, I worked part-time at Aronimink where they played the AT&T this year. And I was in the Pro-Am. I was out with Dustin and Bobby. And even in the Pro-Am, I got a glimpse that there are certain times where Dustin just walks up, what's my number, looks at the lie, okay, and goes.
Yeah.
No practice swing. Like the third hole of the Aronimink, the par four, he tried to play this little cut and kind of hung it out in the rough, walks up this ball, you got 151 stick, you know, 140 front edge. All right, grabs his 9-iron, didn't even take a practice swing, and knocked it to 10 feet.
Yeah,
you know, as much as it's blame on the caddy for, hey, you know, be careful, blah, 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 I saw that, you know, they work well together, but he definitely gets just in that mindset where he gets really, really fast sometimes.
Yeah, you know, but, I mean, no offense, I look back, there hasn't been a guy that's blown two, he was in the last group of two majors since Norman in 86.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, that's what he needed, though. You know, so, you know, you hate to pile on the caddies. You know, they are the employee. But I was just saying, you know what, I think maybe we need to look from a media perspective, and you hate to call them out, but I just thought it was, you know, it's one of the all-time gaffes. And in an all-time gaffe, you know, there's equal blame to share. You know, the PGA of America for horrendous marshalling. I mean, I was at Firestone the week before, you know, a world golf event.
Yep.
You know, and I witnessed the, you know, the Phil and Rory crowd and the Tiger crowd. I mean, you know, it was just poorly run because I think you got everybody on the one side of all the holes because of how the course sets up. And then, you know, Dustin, obviously, you know, I mean, that, like I said, that ball was not on the lip the way it, you know, people make it sound like that ball was 2 feet in the lip. I mean, that thing was pretty far back.
Yeah.
And then the caddy, I mean, there's a time and a place where you just got to tell your guy, hey, you know, and quit running off the, you know, the thing. So there, I think there's plenty of blame to go around, but I just think you got to look
and,
at
you
that.
You know, the thing that I've had a lot of people say to me, hey, you know, what if that's Thursday morning, or what if that's Friday morning, or Saturday afternoon, and he's not in the last group? And I was like, you know, you bring up a valid point. Say he's 3-under through 8 in sixth place, and it's Friday afternoon. They're not on television yet. There's no cameras around, and he hits that shot. The only way he gets called for the penalty is if some guy in the crowd calls and says, hey, Dustin Johnson just grounded his club in a bunker on an 18th hole.
The players were extremely upset about
it. It's a situation where he just hasn't necessarily been in the last group with all that hype and surrounding enough yet. He's still growing into that. And I think, you know, Bobby is too. Bobby's, I think, only been on tour for 2 or 3 years. So I think they're growing into that together.
Yeah, I really like Johnson, though. I mean, I think he's going to be one of my two guys to take Augusta next year right out the gate. I mean, I think he's supremely talented. It went from being a great tournament to a very pocked tournament, you know, very quickly. It just brings down the game of golf, which really upsets me. But it was very frustrating because of how it all went down, especially with what's with the trash being everywhere? I mean, good God, get it together there. I mean, it's just, you know, it looks great. And here's another thing is one of the big things people say about the courses, it looks great on TV. Well, at a certain point, the tournament needs to play well versus looking great on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, Pebble Beach, they're not watering it like crazy. They're being a little more sensible with their watering practices, being a little more eco-friendly. You know, we got to get past it looks great on high, you know, HD. I mean, I think compelling golf tournament that would have maybe ended without a major rules gaffe and a poorly managed event. You know, probably in the end, the drama would have been better than, like, say, something that looks great on HD.
And granted, I don't know as much about as many different courses as you guys do, but I just you mentioned Pebble Beach. Just to me, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, that's the one that kind of comes to mind a little bit here, Kevin, in terms of some similarities with some of the water holes and everything like that. It's just a surface perspective on my part, but in some ways, some of the holes just seem to me to be at least visually reminiscent of Pebble Beach.
Sure, absolutely. You know, different designer, obviously, but... You know, the views are obviously spectacular. You know, it obviously helps to bring, the water into play and being able to see the lake from all 18 holes. It's definitely aesthetically pleasing, you know, as many courses are around the world. But, you know, there's certain holes, you know, I'm not a fan of the 18th hole in particular. Mm-hmm. I think it's a 500-yard par 4 where, you know, your driving area was 25 yards wide. I mean, I know these guys are good. But, you know, that's crazy. You know, I live, you know, here in Philadelphia, like I said, work at Aronimink, where the fairways average about 35 yards wide. And, you know, coming in 2013, they're going to Marine, which is the top 10 course in the world, where those fairways average about 23 or 24 yards wide, yet the course is barely 7,000 yards.
Yeah, they said...
You know, Whistling Straits was playing, what, 7,400, 7,500 yards. So, you got to... widen those fairways, give those guys a little more target to hit at, too.
Yeah, they said there was one birdie on 17 and 18 on Sunday, and you got the world's best golfers, and that's all you can do. And I know they're Sunday pins, but, you know, they'd be able to accomplish
a little bit. And that's a myth, too, I think, by the way, Sunday pins, because, like I said, I work at Aronimink. Every pin they use during the 18th tee national, I've seen before. So it's not like the PGA came in and said, hey, you know, here's a little nook right here. Let's just stick a pin right here because it'll look good. No,
right.
Everything, people who play those courses on a regular basis have seen every one of those pins before at every tournament.
Yeah, and that's, you get around enough, you play enough events, you're going to have enough familiarity with that. As far as where this weekend left us going forward, the next couple of big things to come up, obviously, are going to be the FedEx Cup, everything with the Tour Championship and culminating there, and then of course the Ryder Cup thereafter. So, guys, thoughts on where this weekend left us? Obviously, I think everybody looks at Tiger Woods in a little bit more favorable light, just because it would be impossible to look at him in a worse light golf-wise, anyways, coming off of Akron. So, Denker, I'll start with you here. Thoughts on basically how this tournament changed the landscape, if any, as we head into the events of the next 6 weeks upcoming?
FedEx Cup, you know, he's going to play in the first one. He was in danger of not even making that if he missed the cut. So it'll be good to at least have him around for a week, I think. And then if he, you know, maybe he can, you know, there's a good chance because of points he might not make it to the end. You know, the longer he's around, even if he's a train wreck, it's still compelling. So, you know, I just want the good story one way or the other. So, you know, that'd be nice to at least have him around for a few weeks, maybe, you know, get it interesting. That being said, I still think, given what I saw and the dearth of the other candidates, I'd still throw him on the Ryder Cup team. He's got a great singles record. Most of the time he can putt. And maybe he's such a lightning rod, it takes things away from the other guys. So, I'd throw him out there. You know, Kevin, maybe who do you think they should go with? You know, it just seems to me like all the same names are being thrown around for the Ryder Cup team. And I really love Anthony Kim and how he had his surgery early and all. But, I mean, people want to say, oh, don't take Woods because he's not playing good. But, you know, Kim's been downright brutal. Really like that he, you know, tried to get the surgery done. But in good conscience, can you even take him?
Sure. And here's the one thing to think about, too, is this is only the second time the U.S. has had four picks. You know, Paul Azinger got that instituted the last time around. Now, Corey Pavin has four picks. Now, does he follow Zinger's lead where he took 9 and 10 on the points list and then basically two wild cards from there? If he goes that route, Kim and Glover are the first two picks, you know, and then, you know, I can't see how you leave Tiger off the team. I know he's not playing great, but he's the number one guy in the world. He's going to turn the corner eventually. So there's three guys right there. And then you have the final spot. Who are you going to go with? Zach Johnson, Bo Van Pelt, who's having a very good year. Stuart Sink, who's not had a terrible year. Or Ben Crane. Ricky Barnes has been playing very well. Nick Watney's been playing great. But, you know, he's another one where you get into the final round and he struggles.
Pavin, who do you take?
Right now, I probably would go Glover, Woods, probably Sink, and Watney.
Okay. I like Watney. I like Woods. And I'd go Zach Johnson, because I think you need a putter, like a guaranteed balls-out putter. And I'd go one guy down the group. I'd take Ryan Moore, because he's been playing good this summer. He's healthy, and he's he's got that AGA. He's got a lot of amateur match play experience, and I think he's a guy that's going to be around. And I don't think he'd be a victim to the pressure, because he's won a lot of even not on the pro level, but he's been through the cauldron of match play. So
I'll tell you what I want to see at the Ryder Cup first.
But I don't think he's unreasonable.
Is Bubba Watson and Dustin Johnson paired together?
Ooh.
Because nobody in the European team will be within 30 yards of those guys off the tee.
Yeah, I like, you could even go, Holmes, because he was on the last team, and just say, hey, we're just going to go, balls out with the driver. So, there's a lot of guys.
Exactly.
I think one guy, don't you think Pavin's got to take one guy that's not in, the current mix? I mean, just somebody that nobody's talking about. Because everyone's kind of stuck on a lot of the guys. I just don't like Glover. And I think Sink, the more Sink goes without winning, the more upset I get at Tom Watson for missing that putt at Turnberry. I just think Sink's, I just want to see his A game this year.
Yeah. I guess two guys, if we're looking just at the top 20 in the points list that nobody's really talking about, earlier in the year, people were talking about Sean O'Hare, who one of these years is going to really break through and start playing on all these international teams all the time. But he's not playing very well, and the big thing is his weakness is putting.
I know, and that's right. why with Sink, that gets a little, he lags a lot, but he doesn't make, all the birdies. And
yep.
And Glover just, I don't know, like I said, I just would have seen a little bit more out of him. Because you kind of got Matt Kuchar, who's kind of close to the same player as him anyway. So that's why
He made the team. He squeaked in the eighth spot. So
exactly. So you kind of got one of the same guys, but maybe you just bring you throw like you said Watney and Holt, DJ out there together, or
And I like your thought on Moore. And in that vein, I'll go Ricky Fowler, who's 18 months out of college, and in college you're playing a lot of match play golf.
Exactly. That's why I like it. I could live with Fowler. I'd rather have Fowler than Glover or Kim.
Well, and it's funny too. You mentioned about Stuart Sink and having won at Turnberry there. To me, nothing shows the softness of our society now relative to, say, the World War II generation. The fact that we don't boo this guy like he's a war criminal for ruining one of the great sports moments of the last 50 years. Nothing would have been better than Tom Watson winning the British Open last year. And Stuart Sink, he gets away with it because he's a nice guy. He's like, glad he finally won one, but he ruined the moment. I'm sorry. I realize I'm a bad sport for looking at it that way, Kevin. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, it's a fair point, but you have to realize that Watson's the one who blew the putt on the 72nd hole to fall into the playoffs.
And Sink went birdie-birdie on 17, 18, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You guys are right about that. I want you guys to comment on what I see as the real irony of this, because everybody's talking about you know, is Tiger going to make the team, whatever. I agree. I think he's going to. If you're Corey Pavin, how do you not take him? I think it's an untenable situation. It comes down to basically politics, as is so often the case in life, and positioning. You cannot afford to be the guy who, you know, quote-unquote snubs Tiger Woods. But having said that, you go inside the thing a little bit deeper. You scratch the surface a little bit. This is a guy who's never been dominant in any of these events. This is a guy who, when he was on top of the world, the whole thing was, well, how come it doesn't translate to the Ryder Cup anymore? So start with you on this, Tom. I mean, it's one of these weird things. The thing that would be the greatest irony is if he comes out and he's a real ass beater and really takes it up another notch at the Ryder Cup, but you know, this whole thing, from the tone of the conversation, it's almost like people are presupposing something that's never happened from the guy.
You know what? And you know, I'm not a big fan of Woods, but I respect what he's accomplished. I think some of the... During the Ryder Cups, his singles record is great, which is, you know, one of the first things you got to look at. His match play and putting are world-class as well, elite. And then some of those losses, he just got up against like the Spanish Armada with Sergio and Olazabal. And then he got up against Monty and Kevin, you could probably tell me the guy that, you know, Monty's paired up with. But he just kind of ran up against some of those buzzsaw groups that, I mean, you know, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods in their primes paired together. I mean, those guys, the English group with those two, they're just out of their minds. So. And then, you know, there was some of the failed experiment where he got put with Mickelson, and, you know, Mickelson changes his equipment, you know, a week before the Ryder Cup, and then just starts spraying it everywhere. And, you know, that's Tiger's fault. I'm going to cut him some slack because, you know, it was kind of like the Earl Campbell running for 1,500 yards on a Houston Oilers team that sunk, you know. I think he did his yeoman's work, and I don't think he has to apologize for his Ryder Cup record. Mickelson, you know, not so much. Kevin?
Yeah, I'm looking at Tiger's record. 10-13-2 overall. Correct. In the Ryder Cup. So that, you know, definitely ran into some of the big names who were hot at the time. And, you know, you look at Phil right there, 10-14-6. Losing record in all three sessions. You know, at least Tiger has gone 3-1-1 in singles. Yeah, the way the European team is shaping up, they're going young, and they're going, you know, inexperienced too. So as much as it might seem like they have a huge advantage because, you know, they have three of the top seven players in the world on their team right now. But, you know, they're not playing great, you know, A. And B, they're also young, so they haven't felt this pressure before.
Yeah, you know, the stalwarts, you know, aren't really there, like Monty, Olazabal, Sergio. I mean, those have been really the big, you know, the big killers.
Sergio just said he's taking 2 months off or whatever, so right. he doesn't even want to play.
You know, does Paul Casey really frighten you in like in an amateur style setting? No, not so much. Poulter, who, believe me, he's one of my favorite people on tour, he's hitting it everywhere. And so there's another one there. So, you know, I think, you know, you got to look at some of the match play things. The Ryder Cup, this isn't like they're playing it at the Belfry in the 80s. This is going to be more of a, you know, an American, you know, a modern course. So I'm not as worried as other people. You know, it's getting hot with the flat stick at the right time. And that's why I'd rather err on the side of bombers and putters because in the end, you got to make birdies. I'd always rather take somebody that you think is going to make a lot of birdies than someone safe. So that's why I'd rather go with like a Moore or even like, you know, some bomber than like a Lucas Glover, you know, type.
And I think your point about Casey is well taken, but he does have a phenomenal record in this event. And the other, you know, on the other side, also Wetley Westwood, you know, those two pair together have been pretty stout in recent years.
That's who was paired up with Monty the last time Monty was out there. Yep, you're right.
Yeah. But other than Casey and Westwood, the only other, you know, shall we say, veteran, you know, Poulter's, I think, played one or two, but is Miguel Angel Jimenez. He's on the team right now. And, you know, you talk about that Spanish Armada. He was part of that, you know, back in the 90s, You know, he doesn't really have a natural Spanish partner, shall we say, on this team right now. You know, maybe they dig down deep and take Alvaro Quiroz, but he's pretty far down the list. I don't think he'd be in the running right now with, you know, the likes of Harrington and Donald and Justin Rose is not on the team.
Yeah.
Well, fellas, just to bring this full circle, let's get a prediction from each of you guys here. Anything of note that you want to put out there that you're expecting to see between now and the rest of the year? I think, again, the Ryder Cup, for all intents and purposes, caps off the period that anybody cares about. In the other year, it would perhaps be the Tour Championship. But the Ryder Cup is something that I think the mainstream really kind of sinks its teeth into as well. So anything between now and the end of September we should be looking for. Denker?
I think... You know, you got the Ryder Cup. I'm going to go out and just throw out an American win. I think they're playing better right now, which usually is what you want, rather than, some of the years the Americans get saddled with some of the guys that won majors earlier in the year and they totally cooled off. So I'm liking the American side. I know, and that's not a jingoistic thing. I really just think, you know, the guys 3-10 are playing pretty good. I like that. The player of the year race, I think, is like the one thing that's hanging out there because it's wide open. You know, Furyk's won twice. Els has had some big finishes. So, you know, that's to be had. It might just be interesting if this is the year some guy guts out, wins in the last 2 weeks of the FedEx Cup and maybe takes it. Maybe one of the guys with one win right now. The Tiger Woods coach thing is a great story. It looks like it's going to be Foley. So that's compelling. And to be honest with you, from the day they stopped playing golf this year, like for all intents and purposes, is going to be a great day, because you're going to have Woods 0-for-8 in the last, eight majors that he's played in. It's just going to be just a great build up to next spring in Augusta, because people are going to be talking about Dustin Johnson, all the new, you know, faces like Fowler and McIlroy. I think just the offseason with no golf is just going to really saturate people, because now we've infused all these great new names. So those are the storylines I'm looking at.
Well, that right there is a measure of optimism that, because again, 2002 was another year like this where we had a bunch of guys came in, never won anything before, and pretty much had nothing but a search party out for those guys ever since. So you think that the guys that won this year, the Oosthavens, et cetera, we're going to hear more from in the future?
Maybe not him, but I think like the guys like McIlroy, who I was a real skeptic of, but
okay.
he's proven to be the real deal. And Dustin Johnson and... I just think having a few new names, you know, you still have Kim, who needs to get off the schneid and get healthy. And I still think there's a few other young players out there ready to burst through. I think, there's just a great recent article on Ryan Moore, how he's kind of been battling an undisclosed hand thing. I really think he's on the precipice. You got Watson out there who, you know, he's great to watch, which I think, you know, he's compelling win or lose. So I think there's, some more of these names that are kind of replacing, like, are going to get into the old guard a little bit, like the Jim Furyk, Els, Tiger, Mickelson crowd. It's just nice to have this good young, I think, like, when you said, like, McKeel and Ben Curtis won and Mike Weir won that one year, you know, but these, you know, they were all kind of a little bit down. And, you know, they've somewhat validated their careers. And McKeel had that testosterone issue where, you know, he was... kind of out of whack physically for a while, but I just think you're going to have the names now, and the young players are going to be backing it up. So that's what I like.
Okay, interesting. Kevin, anything of a predictive nature for the end of the year?
Yeah, I'll start with Tiger. You know, a lot of talk about Tiger. Obviously, I think he will end up with Foley as well. Part of that is he's very good friends with O'Hare and Hunter Mahan, who work with Sean Foley currently. My thoughts towards him is actually about his divorce, and you know, we're never going to hear about it. He won't talk about it, but my gut says if somewhere between now and Christmas his divorce becomes official, look out next year. You're looking at a 6, 7, 8 win season out of him, because he won't have anything on his mind other than golf, and he'll probably play more than he normally does, and he'll just crush people. As far as player of the year and, you know, some of those races, there's only 5 guys who won twice this year: Els, Furyk, Mahan, Rose, and Stricker. You know, any of them really stand out as player of the year right now?
What about
not really?
What do you think if Dustin Johnson gets loose for one? Because he's got the two big finishes in the majors.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets in there and wins, say, the Tour Championship, you know, somebody even tweeted the other day, will he get sympathy votes for Player of the Year because he's blown two majors? You know, if he wins either the Tour Championship or the BMW, which is the penultimate event, you know, absolutely, that's a great vote right there.
Right. Well, there's something wrong with that if he gets sympathy votes like that. But, Kevin, it was great to have you on. Kevin Curry from the Sports Network, sportsnetwork.com. Kevin, you had a nice flow going here with our man Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick. It was great to have you on. I definitely want to get you guys back on here in the future and recap some golf as it's happening.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Kevin. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it. Kevin Curry from the Sports Network, everybody, and our good friend Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick. Before we go to break, just tell the people what they need to know about the Mr. Flatstick project here.
Mr. Flatstick, you know, the main thing I'm seeing, and Kevin could probably attest to this, is with golf, there's, you know, a lot of opinion, a lot of quasi-informational articles where it's, you know, a few nuggets, but you know, I've decided to make a site which is going to be more of a news gathering organization for golf, you know, really affiliated with the main tour. Obviously, a scope of that, what I want to do is obviously have daily content where it is a news magazine. What I've decided to do is kind of work with my own writers rather than solicit them. So what we're doing is we're just taking a little time and building everything, but we're still tweeting out there, you know, at Mr. Flatstick. So keep an eye on us, you know, all the news on the site. The design, you know, I'm really excited about, you know, what we've been working on. So we're just being patient, but we're staying out there. We appreciate getting on the show. But the Ryder Cup's going to be great. Maybe we can set up a little viewing party for that.
That'd be awesome. Tom, it's always a lot of fun to have you in, buddy. And again, as was proved earlier tonight with hockey, we can, of course, talk about other things with you. It's always fun to talk golf with you. Thanks a lot, my man. Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick, everybody. Member in good standing of the 21st Century Media Alliance as he works to get his site and his project up and going.